And the first time I saw Srila Prabhupada was probably that year. Either that year or 72, L.A. airport. And all I remember is I thought to myself as it all happened, it must have been some kind of ploy. Because we were out there, 100 devotees with great anticipation, waiting for him to come around the corner of the concourse. And I think they planned it this way. Every single other person on the plane exited. And as every new face came around the corner, we thought, no. So we were being built up for this grand finale when finally Prabhupada came. And he literally sort of peeked around the corner of the concourse hallway and just sort of gave a little wave and a salutation with his hands. And then walked out, and of course, naturally after that, the crowd went wild. So that was the first time I ever saw him, and I was amazed at his... I expected from all the anticipation that had built up, a very large, a 6-foot man with broad and with a great presence. And of course, the presence was there, but it wasn't physical, because he was much smaller than I expected. So when he first came around the corner, and there's a head pops out around the corner, sort of a playful little look. But the head was like a foot and a half lower than I thought it would be. So he pops his head around the corner and gave a playful wave before coming around with his hands like this. So it may have been his plan to keep us all in anticipation and heighten the ecstasy, and it worked quite well. But that was the first time I saw him, and I thought he's smaller than I expected. But of course, by that time, I was face down on the airport carpet and wasn't thinking about much else. But I think he was smaller than I expected, but no less regal, no less of a presence. I was, you know, as everybody else, I was half dazed at the moment.
My first impression of Prabhupada, because I had read his books. And as opposed to all of the other Bhagavad Gitas that I'd read from all these yogis and swamis, Prabhupada was very clear, very precise in the way he explained about Krishna, God, the personality of Godhead, the nature of the soul. It was very convincing because I had read various versions of Bhagavad Gita. Even I read the entire Rig Veda in French by some Sanskrit scholars. But it was not appealing. It was not convincing. But Prabhupada's teaching, Prabhupada's book, was so potent. Prabhupada's words in his book really touched the soul. So when I first saw Srila Prabhupada in New York, it was like, it was almost incredible to link this person in his presence. His real spiritual potency was there, and I had read these teachings, and I saw him. It was like, Prabhupada's, the attraction he had was like a magnet. He was able to really channel the slightest spark of sincerity and bring it to Krishna.
So 3 days later comes along and I move in the temple. And the day before Srila Prabhupada arrives, we go to San Francisco Airport and I see his airplane coming in, TWA jet. I immediately almost faint, I think. I cry and I don't know why. Now I understand, of course, the reason why I was crying is because I hadn't seen him in so many lifetimes. And I wasn't aware of that then. And all of a sudden I saw everybody getting on their hands and knees. And I thought to myself, oh my God, what would my family think of this? You know, here I am on my hands and knees. And I looked up, and there he was. Oh, well, needless to say, my life did change from that moment. I was initiated the next day. I was initiated the next day. Hey, everybody's getting initiated. I said, Tamal, you know, don't you got to get initiated too. I said, okay. It's like, you know, joining the country club or the fraternity. I don't know what it meant. So I was initiated. He gave me the name Sudama. That next day after that, he called me to his quarters. Govindadasi was his head secretary and servant, along with Purushottam and Kartikeya. So I went to see, have darshan. My first darshan was Srila Prabhupada, and he asked me what he had named me. And I reminded that it was Sudama, and he asked me, what do you do, Sudama? And I said, I'm an actor and a dancer from a very famous dancing and acting family. His eyes lit up, and he went, oh, I played Hamlet once in Calcutta. And he handed me a play that Hayagriva had just written. It had to have been this thick, much too long, on the life of Lord Chaitanya. So he gave me the play, says, I want your opinion. Come back tomorrow. Oh, jeez, you know, I wasn't this big, this thick. So I went back the next day, and the first darshan instructed me, you do not have to change anything. In fact, he said, to communicate through creativity affects the heart of people.
Hans Duda had just gotten a bus, kind of an old school bus, but it was the first bus in the movement, the first Sankirtan bus. And he was talking about having this world Sankirtan party and travel all over. Everyone was excited about that, and he was telling Prabhupada about it. So Prabhupada said, when Prabhupada would go on the morning walk, Prabhupada said one morning, he called Hansa Duda and said, let us go for a ride in your bus. And Hansa Duda was, oh yes, so he was all excited. But then when we went out to the bus, we realized Hansa Duda, they had taken all the seats out of the bus. It was just this floor. He hadn't yet done anything with it. And Prabhupada couldn't sit like that. But there was no seat. So I got some chair from the temple, some kind of a chair. So what I did is I had to hold this chair down on there was no way of attaching it to the floor. I had to hold it on the floor, and Prabhupada sat in the chair. And all the devotees piled into the bus. Everyone was very excited. And where we're going to go, a ride with Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada started giving directions. I think Vamandev was driving, and Prabhupada was giving directions. Turn here, go on this road. He was driving, and Prabhupada said, all right, now turn here. And in this way, Prabhupada was giving all these directions. And everyone said, where are we going? Nobody knew. No one was bold enough to ask Prabhupada where we're going, but Prabhupada knew where he was going. And we're going throughout Boston, and Prabhupada's giving directions. Devotees are all chanting on their beads. And we go to the downtown area, and finally we come to the waterfront, the dock area, and boom, there we are, Commonwealth Pier. And actually, no devotees had ever been there or even seen it. Prabhupada didn't tell us so many details about his life. He was always talking about Krishna. And even when we got there, we didn't really fully realize where we were, but this was actually the place where Prabhupada had first entered America. So anyway, Prabhupada started walking, and we were all clustered around him. The devotees are walking on this big pier in these big roads, and there's kind of all these warehouses are there, and factories and so on, and we're walking amidst all these big buildings, and Prabhupada was preaching and as he, you know, always did on his morning walk. And then he was talking about pure devotional service, very important, pure devotional service. And of course, the word unalloyed, Prabhupada would always use this word unalloyed. And it's kind of an exotic, you know, this unalloyed devotional service. Because unalloyed, of course, unalloyed means alloy, you know, it means a metal where you have alloys. An alloy is metal made up of many different kinds of metals. And Prabhupada was always saying unalloyed. So that meant without many metals, just one metal. So, and Prabhupada was preaching and he was talking about unalloyed devotional service to Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and so on. And then at a certain point, Prabhupada was talking about this unalloyed, and he took his cane and he said, "Yes, unalloyed devotional service." And he pointed with his cane, and we all followed the cane. And there was this huge sign on this warehouse. It must have been, you know, like 100 feet long, a big, huge thing, the whole building. And it was Unalloyed Steel Company. And we all looked and said, "Yes, unalloyed." And Prabhupada was using this word, unalloyed. I mean, that was probably one of the first sights he had. And Prabhupada used that in his preaching. And then he took us there and showed us, you know, unalloyed devotional service. Very simple instruction, but he used it. He made it so graphic, just like a teacher would use on a blackboard and write the word, you know, and take the pointer and show. We were like that. Prabhupada used to call us his students. We were like these young students, and Prabhupada is showing us.
I remember in Vrindavan, there were just a few book distributors who had gotten an audience with Srila Prabhupada to discuss that very topic. And I remember some of the questions that were posed, and I remember the answers explicitly. One thing I asked was about the quality of our preaching and our book distribution, and I suggested that there was one problem that people said the only time they see us is when we're hunting for their money or trying to give them some of our books. They don't know us other than that, in essence. And his response was typically inspiring and insightful. He said it was almost a query on his part. No, they shouldn't think like that. You should tell them that they can be with you 24 hours a day. There's no reason not to be with me. He used the pronoun me. He said, "You can be with me 24 hours a day." He said, "You come with me, stay with me 24 hours a day, come live where I live and see me, and in that way you can get to know me. And after three days of staying with me like that, you'll become like me." So everyone, that inspired us all, because it, in essence, suggested to us that our example was just as important as our individual one-on-one preaching out on the streets, as well as our book distribution. Our example and how we lived 24 hours a day should be public information, so to speak. So that was an inspiring input that we got from him.
I remember especially one lecture when he first introduced the Namaste Narasingha prayers. Because in those days, Prabhupada said he introduced these prayers to protect his movement. So he introduced these prayers, and some Indian lady in the crowd started to sing Om Jaya Jagadisha Hari, because at the end there's Jaya Jagadisha Hari, and she says Om Jaya Jagadisha. And Prabhupada interrupted the whole prayer and says, "Who has said this?" He says, "No, not Om Jaya Jagadisha." He says, "Jaya Jagadisha Hari. don't concoct. And Prabhupada was very specific about that, because it's in reference to some Artic prayers which various Hindus sing, which they have this Om Jaya Jagadisha Hare. So Prabhupada stopped that. And he chanted the Sanskrit, the Namaste Narasingha prayer, in a very, very grave tone, repeating each and every word. So it was a very, very, very ecstatic experience to see and hear Srila Prabhupada introducing this new prayer and him showing the devotees how to sing it and really bringing about this very potent transcendental prayer to protect his movement.
That second darshan, Srila Prabhupada, he instructed me to use my talent to preach. Well, I was enamored. I was, 18, 19 years old? I told him I was on my way to India. He said, just see, India's come to you. Now you don't have to go so far. In fact, I didn't get there for another 6 years. That's how close it came to me. You know? I had my tickets in my hand to go to Bombay. But Lord Chaitanya had another plan. We went from San Francisco to Seattle. This time, Sri Govindadasi notices my talent for cleaning, and I'm always, you know, impeccable, and my chapatis blow up, and Kartikeya was very confused and not reliable. So Govindadasi was always pushing Srila Prabhupada to take me on board the Srila Prabhupada apartment camp. Okay. That meant no more brahmachari ashrams, no more austerity in the sense of hanging out with neophyte god brothers. I jumped at the opportunity and began my short but eternal career as, you know, looking after Srila Prabhupada.
Prabhupada went to Mauritius. We had some devotees there. They were preaching, and of course Mauritius is the prime minister. The population of Mauritius, I think, is something like more than 50% is Hindu. They're from India originally, mostly from Bihar. Historically, the British had brought them there to cultivate sugarcane. So, Prabhupada was to meet with the Prime Minister. He's no longer Ram Gulam. And so when Prabhupada arrived, the Prime Minister, I think he had some affairs. He was busy with some other affairs. Anyway, he gave Prabhupada his one of his personal limousines, which is a very nice, it was a Citroën. Citroën are very special cars. You know, they're made of aluminum. They're not made of steel. And they have this suspension system. It's like an ambulance has, where it's like you're floating. Anyway, he gave his limousine, and there was this army officer who was the chauffeur, driver. So anyway, Prabhupada was there for a few days, and primarily had come to see the Prime Minister. I had an occasion I had to make an international phone call. I went to someone's house to make the call. While I was there, I was watching TV, and on the TV it showed the Prime Minister cutting the ribbon on a big project that had just he was inaugurating. What was the project? The project was a chicken processing plant. And it showed how the chickens were taken, and there were these machines going around, and the chickens were hung on these by the neck, and then there was this knife cutting, and I mean, and then the feathers, and then the whole thing, and then out comes a chicken ready for cooking. And it was shocking to see us all on TV. This was a gift from the French government to the people of Mauritius. And I was there. Of course, they would then probably sell all the fertilizers and the chicken feeds and all the, I mean, you know, these foreign aid projects are all tied in with, it's actually a business. Anyway, so I mentioned to Prabhupada that I saw the Prime Minister. When I mentioned what he was doing, Prabhupada said, oh, and he's Hindu? And he said, I cannot meet him. So Prabhupada decided not to meet him. So I mean, because it meant the man had no principles. So anyway, so there were some days where there was really no programs scheduled. So Prabhupada thought to we'll go for a ride. We had this big limousine there, and the officer, he had nothing to do, and Prabhupada wasn't going. Brother, let us go for a ride. And so we arranged it all. And Mauritius is a very scenic, very beautiful place. This kind of pristine island. Prabhupada is riding in the back seat. I'm sitting next to him. Pushtakrishna is in the front seat. The driver is driving, and we're whizzing along. It was very pleasant. These sea breezes, the beautiful ocean, sky, and everything is very nice. These sugar canes growing. We were driving along the coastline. And beside him, Prabhupada had his cane. And Prabhupada was enjoying it very much. Had the window down and the fresh air. And he was sitting cross-legged on the seat, back seat. And so Prabhupada was enjoying, and then at a certain point, I didn't realize, I mean, I didn't notice it then, but later on, Prabhupada spoke. At a certain point, Prabhupada just took the cane and put it, like, on the floor, and was holding it like this with his two hands. I mean, just after taking the cane, we just made a turn on the corner, around the bend, and immediately. I mean, there was not a second to react. It happened so fast, head-on collision. What it was an event we found out, a tourist from South Africa was driving on the wrong side of the road. And that was it. So we just hit. I mean, it was, boom, head-on collision. And everyone in shock. The driver, he's full of blood. I mean, he's just... I didn't know what his condition. I pushed to Krishna. You know, the glass shattered. He's wounded, blood. I also with my arm gashed. Prabhupada had blood on his dhoti, his knee, and we're all shocked. I mean, my first reaction, which was a little bit maybe inappropriate. I just put my arms around Prabhupada and just held him. It was just so shocking. And Prabhupada didn't say anything. And then Pushtakrishna was out of it. I was the only one who could function. I don't know, somehow I just got out of that car. The other car was a Volkswagen. It was man and woman. And the woman, she was like unconscious. And the man, he was he was getting out of his car. And anyway, I realized I got to get Prabhupada out of here. And I didn't know, even know where we were. And I didn't know where our house was. I didn't know anything. And anyway, then after a while, a car comes by. And now Mauritius, of course, is in, you know, it's an Indian place, and there are very few Western or white people. So anyway, this other car, the car that we had, they were white people. The car that also came, there were white people there. So anyway, I tried to stop the car. The car just went right by. They didn't want to. They saw this accident. They didn't want to. Anyway, then another car came by. This time, I stood in the middle of the road. The car stopped. So the car stopped, and I went up to the people in the car, and I said, please, we need help. My grandfather, I don't know what to say. I said, my grandfather is injured, old man. Please, you have to take us to the nearest hospital. So they said, okay. But they also saw the other car with the woman. And the woman was, they saw Prabhupada. They saw he was in India. Then they see this woman. She's unconscious. She's full of blood. Prabhupada just had a little bit of blood. But she was really bad. You know, Volkswagen, head-on collision. So the other man was wanting for his wife. He wanted attention for his wife. So we were competing, and so they were saying, "Well, maybe we should take her first, you know, because they didn't have much room." And I said, "No, no, you take us." And the other man said, "No, no, we want to go." And I just slapped the car. I said, "You're taking us, and you're taking us right now, and let's go. There's no." So they said, "Okay, okay." And so I took Prabhupada out of the car, and we went and took. I mean, everything. Prabhupada is absolutely silent, never speaks a word. I put him in the car, get in the car. And then these people start driving. And anyway, we're getting in the car. I mean, the only reason they were taking us is because I forced them. And we get in the car, and they say, "Well, we don't know where the hospital is, and this and that." And anyway, we're going over here and to our hotel, and you can go to the hotel. And I said, "No, no, we want to go to a hospital right now." And so Prabhupada didn't say anything, so I knew whatever I was doing, Prabhupada was agreeing to, because he didn't say anything. So, but then I could see these people weren't helping us, and they didn't even want to take us, they didn't want to find the hospital, they just wanted to go there. So I realized, being with these people, this is not good. I just told, "All right, stop the car, they're not going to help us, stop the car." And they stopped the car, and I took, we got out of the car. And then they left, and there we are, standing in the middle of nowhere, and I don't know where to go again. I mean, lost, you know. And then another car comes along, and I stopped that car. But this car had three Indian guys in it. And they saw Prabhupada, they were, you know, offering respects, and, "Oh, Swamiji," and I said, "Yeah, take us to the nearest hospital, get in the car, we'll go to the nearest hospital." Then Prabhupada said, "No, take us home, no hospital." So, I didn't even know where our home was, and we had to, eventually they could understand where it was and so on, and so anyway, they were very happy to take us immediately home. We were on the all the way on the other side of the island. I mean, it was quite a drive. So we go home, and the car pulls in. Hari Kesh Maharaj was there. He didn't come with us. He stayed. He was doing the transcription. He stayed back. I mean, he didn't know what was, because we left in a limousine and we came back in this junky old with three Indian boys, a junky old car. was, and then Prabhupada gets out of the car and his blood on his door. I mean, he's just shocked. And Prabhupada's not speaking anything. Just goes into the house, sits down in his place. And so we had to dress. There was a wound. We had to dress the wound, clean it. And then... So then Prabhupada was saying that now he wants to go back to Bombay. Prabhupada never wanted to leave Bombay anyway, even for these, any other trip, because Prabhupada was very much concerned with the Bombay project, getting the land, you know, the fighting all the government, the municipality, the local politicians, the residents, the seller. I mean, it was just a constant battle. It required constant supervision. Prabhupada had to do that. So then Prabhupada said, well, let us immediately go back to Bombay. So, and Prabhupada never spoke about it.
At another time, there was a discussion about those of us who at the time we're beginning to teach others how to distribute the larger books, the Srimad Bhagavatam and the hardback Bhagavad Gitas. So we at that time, it was the early 70s again, and there we were traveling from temple to temple. And the question was whether or not we should put on displays for the devotees, performing for them a book distribution skit. One of us acts as the non-devotee receiving a book. The other of us acts as a devotee. We're passing each other on the street. Devotee flags the non-devotee down and has an exchange ending up in a book sold. So we asked him, should we perform these skits as we go around and preach to the devotees? And he said, no. It's a little unnatural. He said, but you should travel, you should preach, and you should teach these devotees who you're preaching to how to be sincere. And his point was that that was the essence of book distribution, of preaching. And he went on to articulate that preaching depends on circumstances. So, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but his point was that in dealing with each person, you're going to have a different audience. Therefore, there's no static or rote way to distribute a book or to preach. But he said, by teaching the devotees to be sincere, and he made one of those, at least what I thought at the time was one of those wild sweeping gestures, you know, which is probably just pointed to his heart, but to me, in my mind, he was waving and very sweeping and pointed to his heart. And he said, then if you teach them to be sincere, the real teacher from within will give them information according to circumstances, will teach them how to distribute the books.
Gargamuni had obtained this apartment for him. There was a dump. Oh, tight Gargamuni, bless him. It was a dump. And Srila Prabhupada walks in with Govindadasi. And Govindadasi also has a very interesting, blessed rasa relationship with Srila Prabhupada. She used to tell him, this will never do. And that was part of the requirement for being a good servant with Srila Prabhupada, is that you had to be almost parental with him, because his health was not well. And so you had to have a heavy hand sometimes, which to most people is unthought of with guru. It just so happens that Srila Prabhupada, because of our Gaudiya Sampradaya, so, and being a pure devotee, was so real that he identified his relationship with each individual devotee. And he expected you to respond. If you were going to be, a debate, then he wanted to debate. If I wanted to cook and massage and make his home clean and nice always, he would give me that facility. Till I didn't want it any longer. Well, he comes into this place. Govindadasi says to Gargamuni, this will never do. we have to find another location. Srila Prabhupada, what do you feel?
Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada's in Calcutta.
And Govindadas, he says, no, I'm sorry. I have to put my foot down. So she and Garga Muni take off to go find another location. And I'm there with Srila Prabhupada. So there's a television in this place. So he says, turn the TV on. I was like, you know, turn the TV on? Now, I only just joined a month ago. And I'm told, you know, when I joined, oh, no, we don't do this, we don't do that, we don't do drugs. In fact, I remember taking my last LSD experience on my way to move into the temple. So I said, okay, I turned the television on. Because we're nothing there. I mean, we were chanting. He was always chanting. Somehow. So this washing machine commercial comes on. And the washing machine is agitating, and it's stick cartoon characters. And Prabhupada is almost on the floor, laughing hysterically. He said, oh, you Western people. He said, you make a box to wash your clothes in, and then you sell it for an exorbitant amount of money, and you have them assume characters. Kirby and Mrs. Kirby and, you know. Well, we watched, I laughed, of course, frightfully I laughed, because I didn't know whether I should laugh or what, you know. It wasn't until later on that I understood what my position was, you know, in serving him, that is. So he was chuckling, so he wanted me to turn the station. So I turned the station. He wants more commercials. He thought that they were the most interesting, bizarre display of material life he'd ever seen. You know, that they actually make film about sense gratification needs. Okay. Well, that was my first, I guess you would say, experience with Srila Prabhupada that was not in the mode of awe and reverence.
Another time, another thing which I thought was unique about Prabhupada's, you might call it Prabhupada's innocence, having to do with our Western ways and our interpretation of things. There was a discussion, and it was about book distribution and Sankirtan, street preaching. So we said, I think it was Tripurari who said, so in many temples, they're not having Sankirtan class, meaning that they weren't teaching each other how to distribute books and inspiring each other about street preaching and Sankirtan in a class format. That was Tripurari's intent. But Prabhupada took it in an entirely different way. He said, no? No Sankirtan class? And we all in unison said, no, Prabhupada, because we were expecting him to suggest, oh, this should happen everywhere and you should head it up, and we thought we were going to get some new service. But he said, no Sankirtan class? We said, no, Prabhupada, they're not doing that. And then he asked maybe three times, no? He said, there should be Sankirtan every class. Before class and after class, always Sankirtan. So he was thinking that there was no chanting of the holy names prior to the classes, to the regular Bhagavatam Gita morning and evening classes. But we were thinking that there was no technique class about preaching, which was in one sense a foreign concept to him, that there would be techniques for this.
So the next time that I had the chance to meet Srila Prabhupada was in India. I went to India with Guru Kripa in the summer of 1971. Srila Prabhupada was already in India at the time, traveling in various places. So he stayed in Bombay, Guru Kripa stayed in Bombay, and I went to Calcutta. And one of the first times I saw Srila Prabhupada, he was in his room with various respectable Indian gentlemen. So after the Indian gentlemen left, a few devotees were there. Bhavananda was there, Jayapataka, Ribati Nandan. And I asked Srila Prabhupada a question. It was one of the first times I really had the chance to ask Srila Prabhupada like a one-on-one question. I said, Prabhupada, there has been considerable controversy over your statements that the materialistic scientist never really went to the moon. A lot of people really don't understand this. I says, we accept your statement. I'm your disciple. I accept it. I firmly believe it. I says, but how do you explain this? So then Prabhupada went and he put his hand up in the air and he said, as far as I'm concerned, they never went. And he went to an elaborate list of reasons, all the way to the idea that the moon is a luminous body, very effulgent, self-effulgent body. And it is contradictory to say that they have recovered some dust and stones from a luminous body. Then he went on and gave another reason, that according to the Vedas and the Bhagavatam, you cannot go to another planet without a suitable body. You cannot just force entry into another planet. And then he kept giving an example of America, that you cannot just force your entrance into your country. You have to take a proper visa, go to the immigration department, then you can come in. And then Prabhupada said, he gave another example that about the days of the week, that in all cultures, all Vedic cultures, or all ancient cultures, the day starts with Monday, Tuesday, the moon is usually always the first. And Prabhupada went like that and gave so many examples. He says, in his opinion, they did not go to the moon, but to a planet between the moon, Rahu. He says they cannot access the moon. Then he also explained, as early as 1971, how the moon was far above the sun, which seems contradictory to the common understanding of scientists. So in this way, Prabhupada was very, very relaxed. Because at that time, when Prabhupada first announced this, one of his servants that was there at the time, Purushottam, had brought a TV set in Prabhupada's room. Devotees had told me this. And he tried to show Prabhupada the entire letting Prabhupada still. They cannot go there. So over that incident, that devotee had left and gone on to various other pursuits. But Prabhupada was very firm about this. He did not compromise. So that was a very interesting point.
One afternoon, I was bringing him, after he wakes up, his rasgulla and something. And I started to enter the room. And the sun was going down, kind of. And he was looking, this room faced out on the backyard. And the whole room seemed purple and gold. There was this energy. And Srila Prabhupada was chanting and crying, tears of ecstasy. Well, I mean, far be it from me, you know, we haven't even had nectar devotion yet. So I get alarmed. But I don't do anything. I back up. I back up out of the room with the tray. And I go to Govindadas. I say, well, Govinda, you know, what's happening? Is Prabhupada okay? Is he having a fit? She says, no. She said, that's just Srila Prabhupada having relationship. That's Krishna consciousness, Sudama. I said, phew, wow. Well, I went back in about 5 minutes later. Srila Prabhupada said he still was there. And he stopped me from leaving this time and said, Sudama, don't leave. I'm crying because of the mercy of my Guru Maharaj, that I am allowed by his mercy to see Krishna, which I see right very now as we speak, over these grasses. Oh man, it was so heavy that I started crying. He said, why are you crying? Oh God. Because I said to him, you are so powerful and merciful. I've never met a soul like you. And he said, that is Krishna's arrangement.
Another time on the same subject, I think it was myself, I can't, anyway, one of the local book distributors at whatever location we were, asked how it was that Srila Prabhupada had such success in his own distribution of his own first volumes of the Srimad Bhagavatam upon his arrival in New York on the East Coast. And he thought for a minute, and his response was that, "No, I do not think it..." I'm almost quoting. "I do not think it was my success. I think it was just that they saw me as some fancy Indian gentleman, and therefore they took whatever I asked them to take." So he never came across as if there was a technique or this. It was just some... he thought it was his Indian flair, his fancy Indian gentlemanliness.
First time you started this annual meeting at the Mayapur land there, at that time there was just a little hut near the entrance gate there. So Prabhupada would stay in this hut every night and give darshan to the devotees, and we would stay with him for hours, and we would ask questions and answers like that. And many of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers came to see Srila Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada had this idea of trying to engage all of his godbrothers and make some kind of an alliance, like a united front where all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas could preach together. And he wanted this Mayapur project was his way of trying to unite all of his godbrothers and get him to participate in this plan. So several of Prabhupada's godbrothers came there, and some of them were fairly critical of him using the name Prabhupada. But we were in the room, so they requested us at that time, Guru Kripa, Shyamasundar, Rishi Kumar, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Prabhas. Many of us were told to leave the room, and we were just outside watching through the bamboo and straw walls what was going on. And the voices were being raised, and Prabhupada was there. And then Prabhupada rang his bell and asked his devotees to bring out his stationery. And he was speaking in Bengali and explaining to them. The word Prabhupada came out so many times, Prabhupada and Swamiji. And then afterwards, Prabhupada called all of us into the room. And he started to give this example of how Radharani in the spiritual world, she's the topmost gopi. She's the favorite of Krishna. And all of the other gopis, they assist Radharani. And there is no envy whatsoever. Everybody is assisting the favorite gopi of Krishna, Radharani. So he says, in the same way, if one is a true devotee, he does not become envious like some of my godbrothers like that. So Prabhupada was not pleased with the materialistic attitude of being critical of him for us as his disciples to call him Prabhupada. And Prabhupada even says, "I do not call myself Prabhupada. My disciples call me Prabhupada." So Prabhupada was very kind on one hand, trying to engage his contemporary godbrothers. And at the same time, he was very firm, trying to protect his disciples and trying to preach out Krishna consciousness like that.
One day a letter came. Prabhupada was in India. What had happened was that Prabhupada was having these big public programs in India. And one evening, some man challenged Prabhupada. He was actually an Arya Samajist. Anyway, he was saying that, "Oh, Swamiji, you have come here to India with your Western chalas, and but we know all these things. This is our culture. We have all these things, and so better you go, you know, to the other places, do your work there." And all right, you've been to the West, but what about the Muslim countries? What about Pakistan? You should go to Pakistan and preach there and make them devotees. So this was in a big public, one of these pandals, thousands of people. So Prabhupada said, "So you are challenging us to go?" And he said, "Yes, I challenge you. Yes, you challenge you. You should go to Pakistan." So Prabhupada said, "All right, we will go." And then Prabhupada wrote a letter to me. "Immediately go to West Pakistan," he wrote me, and he wrote to Gargamuni, "You immediately go to East Pakistan." And we got these letters, and we immediately left. I don't remember everything was said, but Prabhupada said, "Immediately go." Immediately meant Boom. The next day, I didn't have any money. Somebody, they paid for my a bus from Florida to New York. I didn't go. And we left immediately. He gargled when he had money and he flew. I had to go. By overland to India, taking hitchhiking, buses, trains, whatever way I could go. That's how I went. And of course, the war was beginning. Actually, then Prabhupada then found out about the war situation and the hostilities between Pakistan and India were. This is the 1971 war. Prabhupada wrote a second letter saying that I don't advise you to go at this time. But we never got that letter. We had already left. So we walked right into a war situation. Garga Muni, especially East Pakistan, I mean, when he landed, when his plane landed at the airport, there was no transportation to go into the city because there was no cars on the road. He had to walk from the airport into the city. But just by walking, we went, of course, in our sannyas dress and so on. Just by the time he arrived in the city, he had to walk something like 20 miles from the airport to the city. By the time he arrived in the city, he had thousands of people following him, just wanting to know who he was, what was going on, and so on. So, anyway, we were preaching and we were trying to do something, but it was so difficult. And I was in Karachi. Just north of Karachi is the Sindh Desert. It's the hottest place in the world. You know, I mean, it averages 125 degrees. I mean, it's the hottest place in the world. I'm right there, and it's in May. It's the hottest month. You know, I mean, I was just so sick, and with the dysentery and so many things. So, and I had no books, and there's people are spitting on me on the street and threatening to put a knife in my back. And we had kirtan, and people would come up and just, you know, rub off the tilak, you know, and spit, and what a situation. So finally I sent a telegram to Prabhupada, who's in Bombay. Of course, Karachi and Bombay is just not far at all, a few hundred miles. I said, can I get out of here? I mean, I wasn't supposed to be there anyway. Prabhupada said, don't go. And there we were. So Prabhupada said, all right, come immediately. So then, of course, they made those reports. It appeared in the Pakistani papers first published it, and then the Indian press picked it up, and they published it. Four Hare Krishna missionaries shot. And Prabhupada's in Bombay, and the Karanda came and showed Prabhupada the newspaper, and it didn't give any names, but it said four Hare Krishna missionaries shot. So the Garga Muni was there with Pushta, I was there with Jagannivas. So there were four of us, although we were in different east and west, shot, Prabhupada, my God, shot, you know, and Prabhupada was very disturbed, and he had Karanda go to the embassy and find out this, that, and everything. And actually, Prabhupada thought we had been shot. So then I sent a telegram. So Prabhupada said, yes, come immediately. It said, come immediately, Bhaktivedanta Swami, four words. Oh, those are the best four words. And, I mean, to get out of the country was a big thing. Somehow, we were able to get out. And so I came to Bombay, and I found out where Prabhupada was staying, Akash Ganga. And I went there, and I walked in the room. And Prabhupada, I mean, he just immediately got up from his See, and he came over, and he just put his arms around me and just hugged me to his chest, and then he took his hands and he was just putting his hands all over me. I mean, just like a mother, you know, the child had been hurt or something, and the mother has just seen that the child is still intact. I mean, he was just so, he just embraced, it was just so.
He, at that time, told me that he saw Krishna as a cowherd boy. Another thing that I, you know, I don't know from cowherd boys to anything. I just know him. That was my life. So if he said so, okay. And he talked about how beautiful the grass was. And how fortunate he was to have the mercy of his Guru Maharaj. The very same house, the very same week, he had me call Tamal and a whole group of others. Hansaduda and Himavati had just flown into town. He was asking for sannyas. This is way before this was fashionable, which he always did ask for sannyas. So we all go to Srila Prabhupada's room. Purushottam, I can't remember. Himavati, Hansaduda, Tamal, Dayananda and his wife, who began the LA temple, Nandarani, and we enter Srila Prabhupada's room. Again, this was in the afternoon. Oh boy, and Srila Prabhupada is sitting at his desk, crying and chanting, tears are flowing down his face. And we all enter the room, and we're not aware of this because, you know, we're just aware of ourselves. And we pay our obeisances and sit up. There's Srila Prabhupada, crying. And Hansaduda said, all glories to you, Srila Prabhupada. Swamiji, I think we called him. And we all started crying. And this was a mystic power possessed by the pure devotee to allow neophytes at our level to take us in. We were all crying, and we had no idea why. We just felt this overwhelming mercy. We fell down again and paid obeisances. We hear Srila Prabhupada's voice say, "Why you are crying? Sit up." And we said to him, Srila Prabhupada, we're crying because to watch you like this is, you are so merciful. No, no, he said. Is my Guru Maharaj, once again, who's by mercy, by his mercy I've been nothing. Well, these were my first lessons of the acceptance of a pure devotee of the Guru.
I was outside his room in Mayapur. At that time, it was at what's now a long guest building there. And he was on the third floor, as I remember. And he walked out. I was just sitting there chanting some japa. It was at night. And I had chanted japa there previously. And one of the authority folks there at the temple had told me, who was, you know, a Mayapur resident, had told me, once this gate's closed, I don't want it open for anybody. I don't care what they say. So I thought, okay, I'm up late chanting my rounds and helping to guard, and I'll help you out with that. So there's some lady downstairs. It's about 11 o'clock at night, and she's shaking on the door, on the gate, the very gate that Prabhupada said not to, excuse me, that this temple authority had told me not to open. So I just sat there. I didn't move a muscle. I just kept chanting my japa. And then I heard this lady's voice, "Hari Bol, Hari Bol," and the gate was rattling back and forth. And so I got no response from them. I was ignoring this ruckus that was occurring downstairs on the local authorities' plea. And finally it got so bad that Prabhupada came out. And he queried, he was a little bit upset, so much noise, and he said, "Why are they banging?" I said, "Well, Prabhupada, so-and-so told me that after these gates were locked, they should just remain that way, and we weren't going to do anything about it, no matter who knocked or who wanted to get in." Prabhupada, he shook his head, just almost disgusted. He said, "Come on." So he and I walked down three flights of stairs. You know they are there in Mayapur, back and forth together. He personally unlatched the gate for a lady who was a very hard-working, sincere cook in Mayapur. She had been there for a long, long time and was just like the backbone of their kitchen, from what I gathered. He let her in. They chatted for a while. He personally closed and locked the gate behind them. And as we were walking up, and he was sort of looking at me disdainfully, and I was feeling real bad that I hadn't done the needful at the time, he said, "Why didn't you let her in?" And I just repeated, "Well, so-and-so told me not to do this." He chuckled. It was a full-blown laugh. And he said, "Do not listen to that so-and-so Swami." So from that point on, I just let anybody in who wanted to come in. And I figured that the sannyasi's authority had been superseded.
But one time, Prabhupada asked Subal Swami, who in those days was very, very, still today, very learned and very scholarly. And his godbrother, Obil Kapoor, was there, so he asked Subal Swami, "Please describe the three different kinds of Vishnus." So Subal Maharaj went to this elaborate explanation of the Mahavishnu and Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and Kshiradakshaya Vishnu and their function and the quote from the Bhagavatam and this and that. And Prabhupada was so pleased. He was speaking then in Hindi with Obil Kapoor, and they were shaking their heads and laughing and jolting. And Subal was trying to understand what was going on. He was like looking at them. But what was going on is that Prabhupada was appreciating his devotee learning the philosophy so nicely and explaining like that. And Obil Kapoor was shaking. Because in India, when they appreciate something, sometimes they shake their head like it's like in a seemingly negative way. So Prabhupada was just very, very, you know, appreciative of the devotee giving this wonderful explanation. And Prabhupada would say and interject that time in English, "Just see how they have learned this and that." So proper reciprocation was just so very, very sweet.
So we arrive at the temple, and I had this huge portrait of Srila Prabhupada in the anteroom where you take your shoes off. Well, he hit the ceiling. "Even you," he said, "have become infected." I said, "What? Srila Prabhupada?" He says, "Yes, I can see it." And he chastised me for like 2 hours. "So many discrepancies," he says, "I see here." Okay. Well, I'm crushed, needless to say. And then he says, "And you have not made devotees?" Oh my God. Well, you know, that was like my worst nightmare, because that's what I always heard from my other GBC, because I was one of the first GBC appears, was, "Come on, Sudama, what are you doing over there?" Well, Japan is not an easy cookie to open. Srila Prabhupada told me that, "Sudama, you have been a Japanese in your previous life. I learned fluently to speak and think and dream in Japanese in a year." It was very bizarre. Of course, I had to go to college, get a little help, but grammar. The next day was Vyas Pooj. So this was really the initial Vyas Pooj that everyone follows in ISKCON, even if they do it today. We were taught in Tokyo. Prior to that, we all had it wrong, incorrect. Srila Prabhupada arrives at the temple. I had done something blunderous, like had the whole, I don't know, I was just improvising the ceremony, I don't know. Srila Prabhupada sits on the Vyasasan, there's a guest here, and he goes off with anger. "How dare you bring me here?" And this is to all of us. "How dare you bring me here? How do you insult the spiritual master? Oh, he was really... And we were in... What could we say? The place you could hear a pin drop. We were in, I was embarrassed. I cried. I went out. I left the room. I cried. I displeased him. I go back into the temple room. Teeny little... I mean, the temple room wasn't even as big as this. He says, I have some pictures, photographs for you. You can maybe use. He says, all right. Tomorrow, we will observe Vyas Pooj the correct way. I will instruct. Now take me home. He was pissed. Well, sure enough, the next day, that evening, he told me what I needed to get. The next day, he came in. We all did it all over again. Just the way we have done it for years now. And he lectured on the spiritual master's mercy. No kidding. That evening, he got a phone call from New Vrindavan, from Hari Griva, stating that Vishnu John and Subal and Gargamuni and Brahmananda had kind of, you know, the heat of the mugginess of West Virginia had gotten to them. And they had upset a great many devotees who were leaving because they were preaching that Srila Prabhupada was the speaker of the Gita or something to a kinship of that. And Srila Prabhupada was relieved. He said, finally the bubble has broken. I knew, he said, that my God brothers were behind this. And the result of this is that they have been listening, these others, to Achyutananda. It was deeper than just he's the speaker of the Gita, that we were not qualified to worship Radha Krishna in the Western world because we were malicious. Little did we know just how insidious and power-hungry and envious Prabhupada's God brothers were, because Srila Prabhupada happened to be the one to begin the fructification of Lord Chaitanya's prediction. Every town and village. The rest of them, Tirtha couldn't even do it in London. He had to come back. You know. Here we got, you know, six or eight, white girls and boys going and chanting and turning all of London out. And all of Europe, for that matter. Anyway, he was glad that they had done this because now he wanted them to go out and preach. They couldn't stay in temples for too long. And they had to use the books. They get the books from the temple, but they couldn't lecture. And they had to go preach it. And that's what they did. They split up. Brahmananda and Gargamuni, they went down South Florida. I don't know. This was their penance. And Srila Prabhupada got ready to leave Tokyo to go. This has got to be 1971. To go to India. He said, now I have opened the West. He said, this is my personal program to take my white dancing elephants.
I remember the letter exchange between Srila Prabhupada, Kurandar, and Kirtanananda Maharaj over the topic. Kirtanananda was very upset about the non-devotional clothing being used, and Kurandar thought, what the heck, it works. So they were both approaching Prabhupada by letter in an attempt to influence him to their own view. And I don't remember a lot of details, just that the exchange was there. And it happened, as a matter of fact, Kurandar would show me these letters when we'd come back, and we were just beginning to experiment with the one of these early parties that I was on was one of the first, if not the first, to begin regularly wearing the long pants. And at that time, it was just a ski cap, a skull cap, or something that would cover the fact that we didn't have any hair. So Kurandar, and I guess it was in order to encourage me, because he felt he was getting the he was getting the nod in this controversy, he would show me the letters that were coming to him and explain to me the letters that Prabhupada was getting and sending on the other side to Kirtananda. But at least in the letter to Kurandar, it was quite clear that he said his mood was whatever's going to maximize our effect. And when it came up that one of the arguments was, well, they dress like hippies when they go out and do it. So he responded, they shouldn't dress like hippies, but that doesn't mean that they can't dress like their non-devotee audience. So that, as far as I heard, was the last word in it. And from that point on, we began to distribute books and approach the public in non-devotional clothing.
Another time, Prabhupada, he was sitting in the courtyard of the Radha Damodar temple near the Samadhi of Rupa Goswami. And this Brijbasi couple, this was in the morning after a Nectar of Devotion lecture, they came there. They were some villagers, simple Brijbasi folks, very devoted, very, very simple, very, very attracted to Prabhupada. And we sat there, and Prabhupada had this incredible exchange with them in Hindi, and we were thinking, who are these people? I mean, they're not, we were thinking they were not even initiated, they're not even devotees, they're not even in ISKCON, they're not this and they're not that. But Prabhupada spent over an hour talking to these people and laughing, and it was like he was experiencing increasing ecstasy over the course of this hour. And we could not understand Hindi, we could not understand what they were saying, and Prabhupada was laughing and talking about Krishna. You could hear about Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and the Gopas and the Gopis and the Yamuna and this and that. And then Prabhupada was just like amazingly in total bliss. And later on I found out from another devotee, Prabhupada said that some of these people are actually liberated souls. They're very, very exalted transcendentalists, although they may look like ordinary farmers or some village people. So this was one way of Prabhupada telling us to be very respectful of the inhabitants of the Dham.
My first lesson of making halva alone was at 2 in the morning, when Hari Griva arrived suddenly from New York. Srila Prabhupada said, Sudama, go make halva. Well, I'd never made halva. I didn't, you know. Well, fortunately, I made it correctly, if not too sweet. But not to mess with Prabhupada. He told me, ooh, Krishna likes this. He says, I know you have made this very sweet. He said, that's why he is Bhagopal. Because he is the butter thief. He is taken from the kitchen. He likes the sweetness. He says, Sudama, you have a knack for this. You should make more sweets. I said, yes, but Srila Prabhupada, I don't have the patience for sweets, for sweet making. He says, yes, we have to preach in this age. Go out and chant Hare Krishna. Never mind Rasgulla and Rasamalai. And who has time for this? Then he looks at Hari Griva, myself, and Govindadas. He says, but there's soul nectar. Hurry, go make it, he told me. So I came back, we all sat there and ate halva at 2 in the morning.
He liked to hear sometimes about the techniques. At one time, not techniques per se, but he liked to hear about what our approach to the public would be. And at one time it was discussed that we were talking about the energy crisis, which I think had just become a big issue. So the approach we'd use was that, you know, this energy crisis that's in the newspapers every day and that's got people backed up for miles at local gas pumps, well, the fact is, there isn't any. This book explains the absence of the energy crisis that everyone thinks they feel. So those kind of anecdotes that we would weave about his books and we would create a positive impression of his books were things that he liked to hear. Our creativity in selling and distributing the books.
And Gurudas told two stories that really I can remember, that Prabhupada one time had told him that when he was staying at Radha Damodar, one time he had the chance to look at some of the original manuscripts of Jiva Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. And Prabhupada told Gurudas that if you would only know what is in these books, you would faint. You would actually faint if you would only know the actual contents of these books. So this was another merciful manifestation of Prabhupada to reveal us a glimpse of the transcendental potency of the Goswami literatures.
He says, you should always have foodstuffs ready when a friend comes or others come. No matter what time they arrive, you make something. He said, that is the Vaishnava way.
The rumor was going around that he had had success and spent a lot of time distributing his periodical to the folks that would sit along street side tea stalls in India. So I asked him how it was that that was successful, and he was incensed a bit. He said, no, not tea stalls, as if that was beneath him, and he suggested that my success was with government men. I would always meet with the people, the government officers, in their offices. I would go to downtown Delhi, to the bigger cities, and offer my books to the bigger men, the more reputable men of society, and somehow or other try and preach to what he considered to be a higher class of people. The idea of him approaching the folks that were just sitting along in roadside tea stalls was not exactly his idea of how he had begun to do his book distribution.
So in January of 1973, we went to Bombay, where Prabhupada was residing near the ocean, at a gentleman's house named Kartikeya Mahadevya, who was a very prominent businessman and a life member and a very good friend of our movement. And Prabhupada used to give lectures every day in his room. So we came there and told Prabhupada that we had gone to this one place in South India, in Madurai, and we had been given this wonderful facility by this very wealthy man. And for 15 days we preached and tried every conceivable way to make life members and raise some funds for the Vrindavan temple, and we couldn't hardly get anything. We made like 2 life members in 3 weeks. And then we went to the next city, and all we did was kirtan, hearing, and chanting, and within 3 days we had made 22 life members. And we just couldn't understand. I said, what is this? We tried so hard. We endeavored. We worked. We preached. In one place, we couldn't do anything. And the next place, we just sat on our bottoms and all the money came. So when we came to Prabhupada, we related this incident to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, the problem with you two is you're too attached. You're too attached to the result. I says, our business as devotees is to try to please Krishna. And if you're very sincere, Krishna will personally make sure that you become successful. You just try. Whether there's success or failure, that is not up to you. That is up to Krishna. So Prabhupada was very encouraging like that.
You know, in Hawaii, he would always tell me how conducive Hawaii was for spiritual advancement. In the Western Hemisphere, from what he's seen outside of India, that Hawaii was the prime place for spiritual advancement. Comfortable 80, 85 all the time, breeze, trade winds blowing. You could live with no shoes and just a pair of shorts, picking pineapples and bananas. What do you need more? And coconuts, fresh coconuts. Of course, I never lived like that, but, you know, he said it is a perfect place for that. We talked about Samoans and different races. He said these people, he said, unfortunately, must have the worst karma on earth. He said, they eat pig, they look like a pig. You know. And Srila Prabhupada, as we're walking, and this whole Samoan family walks by us, and he says this, and I'm like, nah, you know, because... But then I thought, wait a minute, I'm with the pure devotee. I've got God on my side. This is, you know, in case they should get offended. But they weren't. Srila Prabhupada instead stopped, because he was just talking about what they looked like and how ugly they were, and you literally using these terms, and preached.
Hawaii was one of Prabhupada's favorite places to poke fun at. Hawaii, I think, was a pet peeve for him. He saw both sides of it. He claimed it as a holdover from another era of goodness. But he also poked fun at Hawaii because the enjoying mood was so strong there. So, of course, he coined his famous reaction to the surfers there. He called them sufferers. And that was walking out along Ala Moana Beach and looking out on the right-hand side of the breakwater as you're facing the ocean. And some, you know, someone typically said, Prabhupada, they're the surfers. I call them sufferers. And on another similar walk, he described the high-rise apartment buildings that were coming up like wild in Waikiki at the time. And he described how people become very attached to their 10th, 20th floor flat. So because of their attachment, they would gain the facility of coming back in a subsequent life as a cockroach in that very same flat.
And at one point, Prabhupada tried to start a mock debate. There were several people in the room. He says, okay, now we'll have a debate. He says, let's say that I don't believe in Krishna. I don't accept your shastras. Now you prove to me there is a God. Of course, that was so dumb. I said, well, Prabhupada says in Brahma Samhita, I said, no shastra. So Prabhupada became a little angry. No shastra. So then I said, well, everything comes from a cause. And then Prabhupada said, no, you don't know. So then he asked another devotee. He says, you also don't know. Then Prabhupada says, none of you know. He says, then he asked me, he says, do you have a father? I said, yes. He says, do you have a father? Yes. Then he asked him, does his father have a father? Does his grandfather have a father? And Prabhupada argued on this basis that any intelligent person can actually see the cause of all causes by looking at the original father. That there must be a father from whom everyone originates. So Prabhupada was very, very, very kind like that.
Srila Prabhupada saw me come in, paid my obeisances, and he just jumped all over me. What is this? Why you have left? Why you are dressed like that? You know, he asked me all of the questions. All of the questions. For 20 minutes, I was sweating, crying, very upset, very confused, very on edge, very on trial in front of all of these godbrothers of mine who were really strangers. My men had been stolen. I was left up. Basically, it was, you know, I got too big of a temple. It's the old politics game. And one way to get you out is, you know, pull the plug, and can't pay the bills, and something goes. Either you go or the temple goes. So Srila Prabhupada said, I want to know one thing before I send you out of here. Do you still love Krishna? Do you believe in Krishna? And I said, yes. He said, all right, you'll be okay. Then he turns to everybody in the room and he says, this is disgusting. This is not how Vaishnavas behave. You knew that Sudama needed help. You knew that Sudama was crying out in Maya. And you let him sit in the corner and ignored him. This is not Vaishnava behavior. A true Vaishnava, he said, would take him by the hand earlier on so that this would never have taken place.
And I said something about, when we distribute your books, Prabhupada, and he stopped me in my tracks, and he said, do you know what book distribution means? And I wanted to think up something very coy and quick to save my skin, but I couldn't. So I said, well, actually, no, I don't. You know, I know that there's a lot of depth to it and deep things that I don't understand. And he turned to me with a strong glance and said, book distribution means distribution of knowledge. Do not forget this. So it wasn't like a sales thing that he didn't look at the distribution of his books as something that would be done with a sales mentality, but rather with the mentality that we were giving much needed knowledge to the people who most needed it.
And at one point, Prabhupada started, he changed the topic and he started to talk about the intimate pastimes of Krishna as a child showing Mother Yashoda the universal form within his mouth. And as he was describing this, he started to cry. Very profuse tears came from his eyes. Then he described the pastime of Krishna killing Mother, killing Putana. And Prabhupada explained that this is the transcendental potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. That even though he was a baby, he was able to kill such a gigantic demon. And Prabhupada was crying like in a very... This was really the first time that it made me... It crystallized my understanding. And it became like a bit more like a realization. That Prabhupada, we always knew he was a very exalted person, a great saintly person, a great preacher. But this is a time where I felt that Prabhupada was like actually experiencing these pastimes with Krishna. I mean, we read them and see that this is very nice, very sweet. But Prabhupada was actually experiencing in his heart this transcendental lila and pastimes of Krishna. So this was like a very, very sweet manifestation of Prabhupada's mercy. That although he's, you know, very practically preaching Krishna consciousness, he was always enjoying these sweet realizations of Krishna like that.
He did talk about once to me in Berkeley about his leaving. And I didn't deal with this well. I didn't want to hear this. As far as I was concerned, he was leaving forever, which he does. But he was talking about Shiksha, Diksha Guru, and the position therein thereof. I was totally confused. I said, Srila Prabhupada, all I know is you. Now you're saying there's another kind of guru? What is this? Wait. He said, no. He chuckled. And he explained it to me. And he told me at that time, when you do not see me here physically, always listen for me. I will instruct you through the bodies of others. From time to time. Well, I don't want to discuss death. Although that's 99% of our process, is chanting Hare Krishna, preparing for the moment of death, so we can become liberated, go on. He said, you know, always listen for me. I said, well, what does that mean to you, Prabhupada? If a dog barks, what do you say? He said, just what I said. Anyone. It can be anyone.
At one point in the after the 1976 Mayapur festival, the GBC had decided to send me, the Rupanuga Maharaj and myself, to Australia. So I think Madhavisa Maharaj had been sent to New York for some preaching. So I had to return to South India to finish some preaching engagements with Achyutananda Swami. And when I came back to Vrindavan, this was in the summer of 76, I told Prabhupada I was on my way to Australia. Prabhupada said, what is this Australia? So I described to Prabhupada, well, the GBC had decided to send me there. They wanted somebody to go and preach there. Prabhupada says, I will write them a letter. So I was, because I already had made arrangements for a visa and plane tickets and everything, my body was in India, but my mind was already in Australia. So Prabhupada said, well, if you want, you can still stay here if you want. That is okay. So for about a day and a half, Prabhupada literally played with me like a father will play with his son. On one hand, telling me, if you want to stay, you can stay. It's very nice. And if you want to go, you can go. It's also very nice. So after some time, I was thinking, what is this? On one hand, Prabhupada is telling me, you can do this or you can do that. So I came to Prabhupada one afternoon. I said, Prabhupada, you've already told me that you can... I could go there if I want, that I could stay here if I want. I said, well, that's somewhat confusing. I said, you please tell me what you want me to do. So then Prabhupada took his finger and pointed at me, and he raised his voice and says, yes, that is what I want to see from you. This is the attitude I want from all disciples. You just do what I tell you to do. So I took it as some kind of mercy from Prabhupada that, you know, he wanted me to stay in India and do some work in a Gurukul and preach.
Srila Prabhupada told me that once on a morning walk. He said, if you think you have become spiritually advanced, and you start acting a role, you'll become mad. That's where he said, I understand lips, milk touched by the lips of a serpent causes poisonous effects. Simply follow my instruction. Where's your Baba Srila Prabhupada? If you're not here, what am I? Listen for me. Now, he's given other people the instruction to read his books. He's in his books. I know good and well he is. Also, I was just never a big reader. You see, in Hawaii, I went to him and I was in tears. I said, they all criticize me. I don't chant Sanskrit enough, they tell me. I don't quote slokas. Srila Prabhupada laughed. He said, sounds like my godbrothers. He said, Sudama, you speak from your heart. That's all that counts. Krishna doesn't care that you can't quote slokas. He said, you speak from your heart, and you are a darn good preacher. You bring many people because of your heart. I said, I've only read Nectar of Devotion twice, Bhagavad Gita 10 times, and that's it. I can't even finish the first canto of the Bhagavatam. You know, he said, so? You cook samosas. You chant beautifully. You have love for Krishna. What else is needed? So he said, don't make things so complicated. It's very simple.
And he would talk very frequently at night about how he wanted his Gurukul system to work, how he wanted the children to be fed, how he wanted them to be taught, what he wanted to do with them, the outline of his Varnashram society, how he wanted the children, especially those children who may not necessarily be inclined to be fully trained Brahmins, that our society should have a, you know, at one point he mentioned masonry, carpentry, gardening, organic gardening, taking care of cows. He says we should have a wide variety of engagements, a multi-level arrangement, so that all of these children could stay within the Krishna conscious movement. So Prabhupada's vision for his Gurukul program was something very, very precise and very detailed. One point he told me that this Gurukul program is the most important program in this movement. And I said, well, Prabhupada, didn't you say that distributing books and so many things are important? He says, yeah, that is nice. He says, we distribute books to make devotees. But they're already devotees. So you have to train them. If you don't train them and you try to make other devotees, he says, books are very important. But he attached special importance to training his children and the children of our devotees. And he also made this comment, which he had made many other times. He says, at one point you will understand that the children of these children, they will be the real devotees. So he did attach great importance to that project like that, that the Krishna conscious children, the Gurukul children, should be given special training and special care like that.
I think another thing that I always liked was his reconciliatory attempt. His attempt to reconcile with the Gaudiya Math, I think, was interesting. Although we know he at many times tried to steer his disciples clear of getting involved in Gaudiya Math issues, and many times even steered us clear of getting involved with Gaudiya Math representatives. But his personal approach to the Gaudiya Math was always one of reciprocation and an attempt to reconciliate over past ills. Even in one letter, he said that we have been involved in fratricidal warfare, speaking to, I'm not sure who the recipient was, but we've been involved in fratricidal warfare. We don't see the same philosophically. Nevertheless, there's no reason why we can't unite for the higher cause, preaching the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So, despite the fact that he sometimes steered us clear, again, wanting to compartmentalize our understanding and keep it pristine, he didn't want a lot of external input to our fledgling mentalities and fledgling outlook on the philosophy. But his personal approach to the Gaudiya Math, when he was dealing with them individually, either through letter or personal interaction, direct interaction, was always one of reconciliation, always one of trying to see the higher purpose in uniting for the cause, the preaching cause of the Sankirtan movement.
Sankirtan